I am very excited to be coming to you guys right now. It is Wednesday. Ooh. And I have not been in front of a microphone for a while, so I just accidentally punched this one. It is Wednesday, December 28th, 2016. We have 3 days left of what is quite possibly one of the most painful years on record. And if you have survived this far, you are a warrior and someone to be proud of. You should be proud of yourself. I'm proud of you. If you've made it through this year and all of the very sad and tragic things that have happened, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of myself. We're all proud of everyone, because damn, we need a collective hug right now. I'm going to talk about the fact that Carrie Fisher died. And for those driving, I apologize because if your eyes get misty like mine have at the very mention of the words Carrie Fisher lately, I'll just keep it short and sweet. She was somebody who I think really inspired us all, but me personally was someone who inspired a change in my life, a health change for the better. Carrie was very open about mental illness and her struggles and shortcomings. And as someone who has depression and anxiety and is currently on antidepressants, I just wanted to say that Carrie Fisher made it more normal for me to feel like it was okay to take medication after years of therapy and trying to figure out what was going on, to the point that I was actually having health side effects like stomach and sort of like digestive problems. I've been on antidepressant now for the past 2 months, and it's been going extremely well. And I'm just saying it so that if you are listening and you're on an antidepressant, you know that you are normal and it is okay if you are someone who is better on medication. Because at the end of the day, I think that the only thing that matters is making sure that you're trying to be a better version of yourself. So thank you, Carrie Fisher, for just living and breathing and being an advocate for not only your life, but the lives of others. You were the very first Disney princess I ever actually wanted to be. So, on a much lighter note, it is my birthday tomorrow. I'm turning 28 on December 29th. I probably shouldn't have just told you how old I was, but hopefully you think I look younger than 28 anyway. And that the curse is working. I need to get rid of that painting. That was a joke I had to finish. Sorry for how bad it was. Is my birthday tomorrow, and I guess the one thing that I would really want is for you guys to check out my Patreon page, patreon.com/superhungrypodcast. And Patreon is basically a chance for you to be a patron of Super Hungry the podcast. Back in the olden days, painters and artists and, you know, people who didn't have to sell their souls to be young forever, a callback. Back in the olden days, there were patrons, basically people who donated to artists so that artists could live and continue to make art. So Patreon is a cool little website where you can sign up and basically be a monthly subscriber, and a donor to Super Hungry the podcast. And because I think that there are probably a whole lot more noble things you could spend your money on than donating $5 to me every month, though I do want that, and if you have it, please send it my way. If you can't, or you know, want to spend it on something else, send me a message and tell me what charity you're going to send that money to every month, because I actually would really love to shout you out on the next episode. Because if my Patreon can get me a little money and other people a little money too, that would be awesome. So you basically have three choices. One, you can go to patreon.com and at least share it with your friends, share it on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, so that you can spread the word to help me mitigate some of the costs of doing the show. Two, you can actually sign up to be a patron. It can be as little as a dollar a month, and I promise you every dollar really helps, because right now I'm completely out of pocket for the show, so anything will help offset that. And then three, if you go to my podcast page and you decide that you'd rather spend your money on something else, seriously, send me a message. Tell me what charity that you're donating to so that I can give you a shout out on the on the show next week, the next episode, and that I can basically spread some cheer and goodwill about other organizations and charities and people that really could use help this holiday season. So in the spirit of the new year, if you feel like you have some money that you want to give, you've got three options: patreon.com/superhungrypodcast. Check it out. I am thrilled to be bringing you guys this episode. I got to sit down with a literal TV legend. I can't believe he even agreed to do the show. Stan Zimmerman came and sat down with me, and if you don't know my name, you definitely know what he's worked on. He was a producer and writer on Roseanne, Gilmore Girls, Something Wilder with Gene Wilder. He was the executive producer and creator for Rita Rocks. He was a writer for the fucking Golden Girls, you guys. The motherfucking Golden Girls. Are you kidding me? Like, I cannot believe that he came and sat down and did my show. Oh, also BT Dubs, he did a very Brady sequel. Anyway, if you like TV, if you like what, I don't know, any of those people have done, any of those amazing groundbreaking shows have brought you, you definitely need to check out the other stuff that Stan is doing and that we're talking about a lot on the show today, aside from everything else. All amazing, all Hollywood, all these old crazy stories. Like, did you know that they developed Roseanne for Russian television? Did you know? I know now because Stan told me, and it was awesome. So sorry, I'm like super weird and jazzed about it. I haven't recorded things in a while. I'm probably a little bit mush mouth, but it's just so cool. I can't believe he sat down with me, you guys. It was nuts. But anyway, he's got an awesome new show out called Sex and Execs. He also did a cool series called Skirt Chasers, and he's doing a new play. So listen to the episode. It's about to happen right now. I don't want to give all the deets away because I really want you to listen. And when you're done listening, you can definitely comment and tell me how amazing you thought this was, because I'm kind of still reeling. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Stan Zimmerman, and I hope you forgive my holiday mushmouth. The Reader's Digest is that my husband and I are now moved and settled in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I'm now recording this in my brand new bedroom. So there's huge moves happening, there's big things coming, and I'm really excited. So please enjoy this new episode with Stan Zimmerman.
Interestingly, Lauren Graham was the first one that told me, like, don't read, because I was doing a reality show on Bravo.
Yeah.
The same time as Gilmore Girls. And then she came to the big premiere party. It was Sean Hayes produced it, Situation Comedy.
Which yeah.
You can talk about all that. You can bring it up. And Lauren said, don't ever read, you know, now that you're in the public eye, because I was the host, showrunner person of it.
Right.
Don't read anything online.
Unless
about
it's like
you.
A deadline or something like that,
yeah,
where
but
it's
no, like
announced
comments of people. She says it'll drive you crazy. So of course I'm like going, oh, maybe I'll look. I thought I'll look until they said something bad about me.
Right.
And they didn't. But they did with my the other person that was hosting with me.
Oh no.
And I felt so bad. Because they went for the physical thing with her. And
it was just I feel like that's an easy thing
sometimes
with women.
Yeah,
it's like
yes.
I mean, I've been kind of living for those reporters lately that have been, like, kind of telling people off on air. Have you seen any of these, like, YouTube clips? Like, one woman, they put a sweater on her on air because she was wearing, like, a tank top or something. And they literally, like,
I swear to God,
while she was, like, in front of the green screen, like, talking about traffic, like, handed her a sweater from off camera. And I was like, this is horrifying.
Yeah.
That's a good way to start, I guess. Yeah, no, okay. Thanks for coming out. I'm excited to have you.
Are we already on?
I mean, yeah, it's a very loose.
Oh, okay.
I'll make it clean.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I don't really.
Was the whole Lauren story on?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I can cut it out if you want.
No, okay. She's my idol. I love her. She's so beautiful and she's so talented. And in the revival, she's got to be nominated for an Emmy because the performance where she's on the phone with Emily and her face and her eyes, and it's just...
Yeah. There's like a lot of memes that were going around the internet after that episode, and it was like basically like me trying to hold it together. Like, and then she starts talking, and then she brings up Richard, and then it was literally like, I think that was such a perfectly delivered moment, actually. And I mean, we were talking off mic about all of my feelings of Gilmore Girls, but that moment in particular was it was so perfect because they didn't make Emily have a lot of response. I thought her, you know, just thank you, Lorelai, was perfect.
And they stayed on Lauren and gave her the moment. So many times in films, they cut away to even just a reaction. And I always feel, maybe it's because I started as an actor, you know, 7 years old, and I direct actors. When you have people that are that talented and their faces are so expressive, be on them.
Yeah.
And then get to her reaction. You don't want to see what Emily's thinking.
Because you know where she's at. We already established it at the beginning. Like, she's on the other end of the phone. You don't need to be seeing
her. And
you want to
see all the colors that she's giving you.
Yeah.
And she does give you so much. And she's so
Well, and I imagine wonderful. It was probably, like, on, you know, the Disney lot or ranch or something. You know, it's like some back lot or something, you know. And there's probably a crew of, like, 50 people in front
and all
of her.
Watching her.
All watching
still
her.
Still doing that.
I mean,
isn't that amazing? And they when
so
you're
incredible.
Watching it on, you know, Netflix.
Yeah.
You just feel like you're just seeing her. And
well,
that's
I mean, I felt that about the scene where she's crying at the musical too.
Yes.
You know, that it was that long push in and you know, she said that was like real. Those were like real tears. Mm-hmm. And I was just, ugh, so good. Well, that's a good, I guess, lead in to say hi, Stan.
Hi.
Thanks for coming today.
Hello.
Happy
Thank you
Friday.
For inviting me. Yes.
Thanks for coming to the closet.
Yes.
This is the new one.
I'm
approved.
Back in the closet. Thank you. Only you could bring me back in here.
That's
years,
what I do to gay men. I just put them right back in.
Thank you very much.
Happy Friday. Thanks for braving some LA traffic to come out.
It was
all
good.
Sherman Oaks is a nice. I am a non-Angelina, so I love the Valley.
Right.
And because there's parking and just
and
trees.
And Fashion Square right there. And anywhere you can put Fashion and Square together.
That's what you want.
Yes,
is there a dress barn in there, too? That's what I want.
I do not believe you go to Dress Barn. Look at you.
I did go to Dress Barn recently, this weekend, when I was visiting family in Oregon. Actually, they have upped it. It's
really?
Like, remember when you were younger and TJ Maxx wasn't cool when your mom
right.
went, but now it is cool?
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Dress Barn.
I'm surprised they didn't like call it like DB now. You know, everything like when you want to
like
you know,
abbreviate.
Rebrand.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like we don't know what the rest of the letters are.
DB16 or something. Yeah. No, it was nice. They had scarves. I don't know.
Okay.
Scarf Barn.
I love a good scarf.
Yeah,
yes.
It was nice. I'm like happy.
Cashmere scarves. If anybody wants to send any swag.
You can
I'm wearing my Gilmore Girls
I was going to say, I love
from,
this.
Well, this was
it's from
the wonderful people from the festival.
The festival
Jenny,
that happens,
yes.
And it always happens in Connecticut once a year, right?
Well, it's only once a year so far.
Oh, I thought they've been doing it before.
This
was the
very,
very, first
one? Very first time. And the reason I got involved, which was so random, and when I also teach acting, and some of the actors like, I don't want to be on social media, and I want to be private. And I'm like, I've met so many great people and have gotten so many jobs from it.
Right.
So Mike Gandolfi, who is Andrew from the bookstore, we were writers on Roseanne with Amy.
Oh, get out.
That's how we all met. That's how I met
that's
Amy.
That's amazing.
And that's a fun story. But so he had just posted something about some fan festival in Connecticut. And I jokingly responded, oh, it would be nice if, you know, if someone invited me. Just
right.
sarcastically. And then the next minute I get a boom, really, you would come? I'm like, well, sure. And then, you know, they offered to fly me there. And then
oh,
I
wow.
got involved with it. And I loved Jenny just in chit-chatting with her and what she was doing because it really was generated just by the love of the show. And I think that's so cool.
Yeah.
And against all odds. So then I helped get the casting directors from there.
Aww.
And she was having trouble getting hold of Amy and Lauren. So I just wrote Lauren. I said, well, are you going to be there? I'm going to be there. You know, and Lauren couldn't come that weekend.
But a bunch of people did come.
A
like,
lot of people.
You know, Kiko
yes.
came and Sean Gunn was there
yes.
as well. Like, future husband number two, Sean Gunn.
Really? You've already got that marked down?
Yeah. No, I already know. Husband
Why?
Number
Why do
two,
you like
number
him?
Three. You know, he's been someone, and I think that a lot of people, Jimmy Fallon included, you know, have pointed out that Kirk is such a recurring fan favorite. But I think it's one of those stories like a Stanley on The Office or, you know, Jerry Gergich on Parks and Recreation, where it started off as sort of this smaller role, and then, you know, Sean Gunn is so funny. He's such a really dynamic performer because he also is in, like, the new Guardians of the Galaxy as, like, the green screen little raccoon. So he's got this, like, Andy Serkis physicality to him, and then they basically, you know... Again, my Gilmore Girls knowledge runs deep, so I know that he didn't start off as Kirk. He started off as just, like, a random other character. But it was someone that I can see you guys probably really started loving to write for him because he has such an eclectic view of the world that was so specifically his own.
He's so committed. That's what I love about the character. It's just so... And I have to say the Uber thing is pretty funny.
It's so funny. Yeah. And then I think that the pig thing is so funny. Yeah, and I just love that the line was kind of almost even a throwaway in the revival. It was like, well, Lulu and Kirk were talking about having a baby. So the town pitched in and we all got him a pig. It was like, you know, and it was like, oh, well, that should buy us a few years. It was such like a cute little, you know, nod to sort of how kooky he is, but also that he does have a wife, that he has found this person, Lulu, who does love him. And like, I don't know, man. It's like a there's someone for everyone story.
Oh, really?
You know?
There's hope for me?
Okay, I'm just going to say there's hope for me. Oh. You know, I found husband number one, so now there's maybe
like two or three. No, you don't get a two till I get a one.
White diamonds and all. I'll be Liz Taylor about it. No, I just... I just
trade them in every few years?
Yes, yeah, like a car, like a lease.
Yeah, it's just leasing.
Hi, Stephen, by the way. I love you.
They should do that. Leasing husbands. Wait a minute. I think there's a movie in that. Don't anyone steal it.
No.
Lisa Husband.
Pending. That's a movie of the week, for sure.
Lifetime. Hallmark.
Hallmark.
There you go.
Give us a call, LMN. But I know, I think that was the beauty of that show in particular, but also to speak to other shows that you've worked on, too. And I do want to sort of go back to hear about your beginning from, like, where you're from and everything, but you've worked on Gilmore Girls as a writer, Golden Girls, Roseanne. Obviously, you worked on the new Brady Bunch, the reboot.
Movies,
yeah,
yes.
The movies. Like, every one of those, specifically those TV shows, are, you know, when I think of Roseanne, you've got so many supporting characters, but then you've got some characters that you think would be maybe not as important, and then later on they have these huge arcs, like her mom and her, you know, like her daughters. They have these, like, really great moments where, you know, DJ's growing up and he's got to, like, they're not
just
focused on one person.
Well, we wrote the episode where
you know?
DJ stole the car and she hit him. And then she felt really bad because she was hit as a kid. And to me, one of the best scenes, and it actually got her nominated for her, I think, her first Emmy.
Wow.
She just sits at the table and she had no words. And that's when I knew, like, she had grown as an actress.
Yeah.
Because she just, you could just see in her face that she felt bad that she was repeating, which is so common.
Right,
with,
the cycle.
With violence and in families. And originally, we got offered it before they had even filmed the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And the cool thing that was, we turned it down like idiots because they wanted us to sign like this huge deal and we didn't know what it was. And she waited for John Goodman and Laurie Metcalf. She was smart enough to know that she was new, she'd never acted, but to surround herself with the best actors.
Right.
And then you see, if you watch in the beginning of the first couple episodes, you see, like, in the joke, she's almost, like, hiding her smile. Like,
yeah.
She's laughing, too.
Yeah.
Like, you see that on Facts of Life. They were all laughing because they were just girls. And I'm like, oh, they think it's funny. But then you see her grow as an actress. So to come to our season and that she allowed that moment to just sit there without words,
breathe.
Was so cool. You just don't see that on sitcoms. But I loved Roseanne because it was... In sitcoms, it was very frustrating. As much as I love Golden Girls, the characters kind of stayed the same through the entire, because that's what they
Bad-ass
did.
Badass bitches.
Yeah, but that's what they did back then because they wanted to, what they call evergreen, that you could put them in.
Relatability.
And out of order in syndication, because syndication was like kind of the big thing.
Oh,
so
that's interesting.
Yes, and they have. I mean, I'm still... making money from after all these years. Not a lot, but
make that paper though.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. So it was a thing where they sort of had to be able to exist in any universe, like as standalone episodes.
Yeah, TV was just different back then. Like, you know, now you can, you know, get it in so many different places. So you can watch, and arcs are now more important. So Roseanne was kind of one of the first shows that really, you saw her, you know, lose jobs, get jobs, people died, they had relationships, they had babies. It was like real life. And that's what was so cool about writing it, because it could be super funny and then it could be, you know, really, really sad.
So last year
I was lucky enough to, Sony International flew me to Moscow to help them develop a Russian Roseanne. So I know, which was so scary, but I actually had the best time, and they were great people I met there. So I was there 2 months in the spring, and then I went back 2 months in the fall.
Wow.
And having to explain to them, because they're used to comedies being kind of bigger or broader, right. And to say, no, this show was unlike any other show,
yeah.
Even in American television, that it wasn't joke, 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 joke.
Yeah.
So that was really cool.
That's so interesting. Yeah. So they're going to do it with all Russian cast, all Russian.
Yeah, the whole thing. They did that with Everybella's Raymond. There's
okay.
a documentary about it that Phil Rosenthal made.
I love him.
Watch the documentary. So it was him. He was like one of the first people to go over there and do that. And he,
wow.
And they were like, you know, we want the characters to be beautifully dressed. And he's like, no, this is just a normal family.
Right.
But the show is literally still on there. Like, 10 years later. So now they're just doing...
Shut up. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's a great documentary. But now they are writing their own episodes because they run original episodes there 4 days a week.
Wow.
Yeah, like for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. So it's been a huge success. So we're hoping Roseanne does that. And then I also helped them develop the Mary Tyler Moore pilot,
what?
Which was... Yes, which was crazy because they didn't understand... I mean, their women's movement is so far back to like
right.
where we were in the 70s.
Right.
They didn't understand why a 30-year-old woman would say no to a marriage proposal.
Right.
Like,
how's she going to make it after
yeah,
all?
Yeah, what's wrong with
yeah.
you? Yeah. And, like, why would she pick these people? And I started, like, singing the theme song, you know?
Threw your hat up in the
yeah.
air, and you were like, you don't understand.
She's making it on her own. This is what's so important. She
right.
found a new family until she maybe meets somebody else. But I don't remember the pilot. She turns down a proposal by her fiancé because she just knows she
it's
needs
not
to
right.
discover herself first.
Wow.
And so that was really interesting. But I got a woman hired to write the pilot. So that I felt like was a victory.
Yeah.
You
well,
know.
And especially, like, I actually studied Russian, like, film
wow.
post-Soviet.
Do you
so...
speak any Russian?
Not
yet.
I can say spasiba.
Spasiba, yeah.
yeah.
That's
and
as
then,
far as I got.
What is that word that we learned in Sex and the City? Stratvutsye.
Yeah.
Like, I can do that one, and
I
that's
luckily
it.
Had a translator,
oh,
and
nice.
I had a driver with a black Mercedes taking me everywhere.
Ooh.
Very fancy. And I had an apartment. But, I mean, at 7 o'clock, they dropped me off after work,
right.
and I was on my own, clear across the world.
Right.
Not being able to speak anything.
Did you venture out ever?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. At first, I was kind of scared. And then I was like, okay, I'm going. And I met such nice people. And
that's
it
awesome.
Was, yeah, I mean, some people just wanted to practice their English with me, which
right.
was fine. But other people, I've, you know, they've come to visit and we've maintained friendships. And
oh, cool.
Yeah. It was
that's
really,
so interesting.
Really gratifying. And that they're so new at the whole sitcom thing.
Yeah.
So they were so happy to, like, have me there and explain how it's done.
Oh,
an interesting
cool.
part was we got to casting. So
yeah.
I got to pick the director and I would sit in casting sessions and they would audition in Russian.
Mm-hmm.
And the actors would come in and they would like do the scene and then they start talking to me. And mm-hmm. the director was like, Amerikansky, don't talk to him. And they would ask him, how do you know if I'm funny or not? You don't know the language.
Right.
But literally, I would say 98% of the time, the director and myself, we agreed to call back the same people.
Because
you just
tell from
know
your body
funny.
Language. Yeah.
You know people, and this is, you know, for actors to hear this, when people come, and I teach an acting audition class in LA and a few other cities, when you're relaxed in yourself,
yeah.
you can just tell in any language. And that's all we want is for you to come in and be yourself. If you're not yourself, who are we going to cast?
Right.
If you're thinking, what do they want? I'll be what they want. Then you're not being yourself.
Right.
So it was a real, real cool lesson. But then we, you know, you film auditions and you
yeah.
send them into the network. But the network was so new in the whole process that they would see the auditions and they go, why is Roseanne and Dan in an office? And we're like, no, that's just the audition.
Right. They
you
thought
know?
It was like a
well,
the, piece
where's
of
the kitchen?
That's
yeah.
So
then I came
funny.
Up with this idea. I said, why don't we take the sets from Raymond,
mm-hmm.
redress them, and shoot the auditions there? And then they were like, oh, my God, we get now we see the show. So it was just something so
That's
simple
so
because they're so new at the whole
yeah.
process of you know, doing multicam shows. And
so I know that in Russia, a lot of the film and television is, like, government-funded. Is there any...
No, this was a, you know...
Completely independent network?
Yeah, yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah,
That's
it was
really
very cool. But then I get there, you know, and I'm used to here the craft services table, which is the table with all the food,
yeah.
you know, and you go to, like... You know, the sitcoms in America.
And it's literally like food for days, y'all.
For days.
Like,
you
anything
know,
you could want.
Yeah,
almost.
Bacon, and here we have this kind of eggs and this
like
and that.
Veggie trays, hummus, chips,
everything.
Gum,
yeah.
like
I feel like
donuts.
Bringing bags
yeah.
of just taking food home. You get there, and it's literally a card table with a pot of tea. And maybe crackers.
So like an indie feature in America. Yeah, but
not even that. Although I've done my indie stuff, my web series and stuff. We do have really nice craft services.
Sex and Execs, yes.
Yes, which is start streaming March 19th.
On?
On Tello Films.
Excellent.
Which is the only lesbian content website around, which is great. So that's I did really my exciting. Last one, Skirt Chasers.
Yeah.
With Elizabeth Keener and Barry Bostwick and Meredith Baxter.
Barry Bostwick is so
good.
Funny.
And I got Leah Delaria to do the theme song. And she,
that's awesome.
Yeah, she sings I'm a Girl Watcher.
She's from Orange is the New
Black,
right?
Yeah, but
yeah.
She's a jazz singer. And
shut
people
up,
don't
I didn't know that.
That. If you don't know, you must,
that's Big
must,
Boo,
must,
right?
Must. Yeah, yeah.
Big Boo from Orange is the New Black is a jazz singer, guys. Sorry. I have
she
to
does amazing versions of Broadway songs, especially like she does Sweeney Todd. You've got to find it
okay.
like immediately.
That's amazing.
Just a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous voice. And she did this.
She seems
like,
really cool too.
Yeah, really. And she was like, I don't want to be paid. Just pay my musicians. I'll record this for you. And she just because she loved the project. So Sex and Execs is with Sandra Bernhardt, who I just saw last night.
Yes, she's your life is goals.
Crazy.
Just goals.
She's doing a new show at the Annenberg Theater in Beverly Hills
awesome.
For the next 3 days. And then she's going to do it in New York. She always works on New Year's Eve because she thinks that's good luck. We've been friends for a long time. So she's in that. Olivia Dabo from The Wonder Years. Mindy Sterling from Austin Powers.
Love her.
Bane Gibby from Enlightened. I loved it. Remember Enlightened? It was
yeah,
Mike
HBO,
White.
Right?
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
so funny.
Fantastic.
I mean,
just want to sit with him.
And then you think of the things that he's been at, like School of Rock and
yeah,
like all
so
these
much.
Other things that he's written. And then he always is like creeping up as like a little cameo of himself. And I love it so much.
I want
much.
His life. Yeah,
yeah he's yeah. very cool. He seems yeah. like a cool dude.
Yeah.
Do you ever
maybe
people
he's like really
just,
neurotic
like,
and then a mess and so it's okay?
Mike, let us know.
Yeah,
are
yes.
you cool or are you fucked up? We just want to know.
Or maybe a little both.
Probably.
Depending on the medication.
Like all
day.
Of us.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's go back
okay,
to
back,
we'll
back.
Begin at the beginning.
Okay, do you have like a musical sting for that?
No,
musical
don't.
Stings here.
I do have a little bit of music in the intro,
okay.
but I still have yet to figure out what my outro is.
Okay.
And so every episode is just me being like, well, what do you think we should do? Yeah. And then I'm like, maybe that should be
and then
my
you just
outro.
Go, ba-dum, just, boom.
Yeah. I've different people have, I just had Tom Wilson on and from Back to the Future
yeah.
and he literally went, I'll just give you some static. And then
that's
that was the end. Yeah,
okay.
It's like, because I told him that I couldn't afford real Foley. So
he did
static for me, which
that's
I thought
nice.
Was really nice.
Yeah.
yeah. So you can do whatever you want. Keep that in the back of your
okay.
head.
Hmm.
But yeah, so where were you born?
I was born in Detroit, Michigan.
Ooh.
Yes. I know, Michigan.
I will be moving
yes,
there soon.
You'll be one soon, yes.
So how long did you live in Detroit?
I lived there till 17 years and then went to high school. I'm like knocking things over.
Oh, you're good.
And I during the summers, I went to Cranbrook Theater School, which mm-hmm. is a beautiful theater camp
okay.
out in the in Bloomfield Hills. But
cool.
there's rolling hills.
That's beautiful.
And a beautiful outdoor Greek theater
oh, nice.
That we would do plays. And they were kind of, I wouldn't say boring, but they were very like princes and princesses and very like kids shows.
Very classical.
But I couldn't deal with that. So I was like, I had to get my fingers on it. So I would improv stuff or I would, if I played a king, I would be like a really fat king with big shoes. I kind of
spiced it up.
I spiced it up. And I remember the lady that ran the place, she was like, I want to talk to you about that. But I would always get huge laughs, and the audiences loved it, so they kind of let me do my thing.
I was going to say, when you hear your first laugh, it's
well,
like...
that was the thing. That's when I knew.
It's the greatest sound.
Yes. Well, that's when it just like a shiver up my spine,
yeah.
that first one, as a 7.5-year-old kid.
Yeah.
It was like, this is it. This is what I have to do the rest of my life.
Were you a ham... in your private life too, like with your parents and stuff? Because I've sometimes
a little bit. But I really found my calling there.
Yeah.
And I had this weird dichotomy where like from 7th to 9th grade, like just my, you know, it's a geeky period for me. And my hair was like this crazy Jufro and my teeth were really crooked and I was gawky and maybe slightly pudgy. And to me, more bloated than I am now. But and so I was not very popular. I was really picked on and I was spit on in school. It was not good. And
yeah.
I felt bad about myself. And then I would go to the summer theater camp and I'd be the most popular kid there. So I was like, I didn't understand.
Why that didn't translate.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it really kind of screwed with my head a little bit.
I think it's because, high school is shitty for everyone.
Well,
for the most part. I mean,
high school, actually, the minute I went to high school, it was weird.
Oh, I guess junior high,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. The minute I went to high school, it was like, boom, I was the president of the theater club.
Oh, wow.
It's so popular. So I'm like...
See, that didn't happen for me until college. Like, I didn't really find any of my, like, tribe until college. But I think I went to a Southern Baptist high school.
Maybe that's why.
So I think there was probably a little bit of that. But I think all the people that I hung out with, at a certain point, I was very like, I think I'm going to leave the church. I think I'm not maybe going to, you know, because I went to church at the same place I went to school. And so I think I kind of was like, I'm going to hang out with people that I don't go to school with, you know, like all of my friends will be outside friends and we will, you know, like me and, you know, all of my like weirdos and whatever. And
the
I think
kids at
now
school probably did not like that
or just didn't care. I think they just legitimately didn't care. Like, because I went to, you know what I mean? Like, I think, and now I'm in touch with a few people that I still, you know from high school because it was such a small school. And it's like, I look back on it and I'm like, I feel bad for everybody. I don't think anybody had like a good time. Although I will say I was never spit on. That is very shitty.
Yeah, really awful.
I was pushed one time, but that was really it. Like, but that was like, I don't know.
It's nothing. You can't.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's no TV movie about
that.
Yeah,
like nobody is sad about that.
Yes.
Like nobody's playing me
while
I get
pushed.
Yeah, that's not real.
No.
So
you need something more than that. So then I was in all the high school plays and so that was pretty exciting. And
that's cool.
Then I decided my father wanted me to go to University of Michigan because that's where all my family went to. And so I applied, but I really wanted to go further. I'd spent a couple summers at a theater camp in New Hampshire.
Okay.
And everyone there was from New York. And they said, if you really want to study and be in theater, you have to go to New York.
Right.
So I set my sights on NYU.
That's
not
awesome.
Knowing how, can I swear on this?
Yes.
Okay, how fucking expensive that place was. But my mother was so great. I have to commend her. She said, if this is what you really want to do, we'll figure it out.
Wow.
So I had to go to New York and audition, and luckily I got in.
That's amazing.
And she said, if this is it, we'll do it. And I got work study and went to New York, and that kind of changed the trajectory of my life. And then I met my writing partner, Jim Berg.
Right.
In the dorm. And I always had these crazy ideas in my head, and I would make up plays, but I wasn't a reader, so I thought I couldn't write. And when I would write in English classes, I didn't like all the adjectives. I just wanted to get to the point.
Right.
So that made me think, well, you can't be a writer, because to
very
me, writing is
and
flowery and, you know, just pages and pages of shit.
Description.
I was like, I wasn't like that. But interestingly enough, in TV, especially sitcoms, you've got to get to the point.
Right.
So
you have 27 pages or 24 pages.
So that was fit with me. Also, because I was so unpopular and not really good in sports or wanted to be outside, in my bedroom during the time of being spit on, I kind of threw myself into my imagination.
Yeah.
And I came up with my own TV network in my bedroom.
That's awesome.
And I literally counter-programmed 7 days a week schedule against the networks. Yeah. Crazy, right?
That's so cool.
And I made up advertisements for...
And would you like film them or you just like wrote
just
them and performed them? Like, oh,
no, they were all in my
head.
You know, and I fell in love with Lily Tomlin, who was from Detroit. So she, of course, had her own variety show. So I gave her a show. And just, you know, if I saw different things I liked or if a show got canceled, I would put it on my network. And then I would, in my mind, hold these, you know, press conferences to announce my schedule. Pretty insane, yeah. So I was always thinking of this business. And so it's so interesting to, you know.
Have that trajectory actually.
And to be, so it's not that weird that I'm doing this and coming up with TV shows because I've been doing it since I was, you know, 11, 12, 13 years old.
That's so funny. Do you think that that's part of why, like, do you think your parents were very aware of that and that's part of why they were so supportive? Because that's huge.
They didn't know what I was doing.
Oh, really?
Yes. So,
they didn't know you were a Dick Clark Productions upstairs
This
going
is
on.
Something really big happening. I can't come to dinner. I'm on with the network. You know?
Guys, I have a call.
To see if Lily will, you know, extend her series.
She says
order.
She'll do it.
Yeah.
Good day.
And luckily, years later, I did tell her that.
And she didn't think it was weird?
No, she was like, of course you did.
That's
she was
so funny.
Yeah, so it was so great that I could tell her that, you know, I've been wanting to work with her. And then we haven't officially worked, but we did work on a movie once. The first feature that we wrote on spec called The Ruthie Ruddock Story was about a suburban housewife who went to Greenwich Village in 1969 to save her sister from becoming a hippie.
Okay.
And she gets involved in the women's movement, the black movement, and the gay movements. Because I'd seen a documentary called Before Stonewall.
Okay.
And they had said how that one summer, those three movements
were kinda, all converging.
Yeah, converging. My writing partner and I went to the, it was one of the first Outfests.
Yeah.
And we're walking back to the car and we said, that was so interesting. I wish we could come up with like a character that could go into all that. Yeah. I remember when my mother went to visit her sister in Ann Arbor, she had to ask my father permission to go. And I remember just as a kid going like, well, you're your own person. If you want to go, go.
Yeah.
And that so struck me. And so we used that as a very uptight suburban housewife in the time period that gets awakened by this experience.
Yeah.
And we wrote it on spec, and we thought our agents were going to kill us because it was such a weird, quirky movie. And, four different companies wanted to buy it.
Wow.
And, it was like Ron Howard and John Davis and all these people.
Yeah.
And we ended up sending the script backstage. Lily was doing her one-woman show in Hollywood, and we were just very aggressive. And so mm-hmm. we hired someone to go and deliver it with a note and forgot about it. And, 4 weeks later, our agent calls and says, why is Lily Tomlin calling us? And we're like, oops. And she wanted to do the movie. So then they said, she wants to sit down with you and have dinner. Freaking out. Mm-hmm. Like my idol. She's like the smartest person in the world.
So you died, you came back to life, and then you made dinner plans.
Yeah, and then it was happened to be on my birthday, and I didn't tell her. And then I said to my writing partner, you cannot leave the table, because if she talks to me, and he's always peeing, I'm like, you've got to sit there. So the two of us.
Sorry, I just want to point out that you just threw up your hands, exasperated. He's always peeing. Yes. I want to know that there's definitely 20 years of him going to the bathroom and you being like, you're fucking peeing right now and I need you.
Well, someone said once about writing relationships that you get so close, and this is going to be horrible for people that are going to turn off. But you know your partners smell their shit.
I believe that though. Yes. You spend a lot of time together.
You
do,
yeah. So we sat in this meeting and I remember we just sat at the table with her.
Not allowed to pee.
No. And she said something about the character's epiphany. Mm-hmm. And we had never heard that word before. I mean, we were literally like maybe 22.
Wow.
Yeah. And we're going, yeah, her epiphany, and
just
it wasn't until
that.
And this is before we could, just look on our phone. So we're like, well, we don't know what epiphany was. And then she left. And then I think we walked out with her to the car. And then we went around the corner. And it was like around Gower and near Gower Studios.
Yeah.
And I think we peed on a
like
wall.
Like Sunset Gower.
The only time I've ever peed on a wall. Thank you very much. Because we just couldn't go back in the restaurant and she was gone. But we were just, hours and hours of drinking with her.
So much excitement.
So, yeah. Well, yeah.
Did you look up what epiphany meant?
We did.
Oh, good.
So now we know. And now we have epiphanies in all our characters.
So you sold that and did it just sort of?
No, we sold it and they spent a lot of money on it. And then they kept wanting to change it. And then in a typical Hollywood manner, it's still sitting
on someone's shelf somewhere
with a lot of money. So in order to make it, we'd have to pay that back. So it's kind of become cost prohibitive unless someone like Meryl Streep says, I want to play the part.
I love that you think Meryl listens
to
this podcast.
She might be. You never know.
But that's an interesting, just a side note, that's an interesting sort of actuality maybe for people who are listening that don't understand how scripts get sold.
We've sold so many that have not gotten made. You can make a whole career out
of just selling unmade scripts, because you get paid once, basically you create something, you register it with the WGA, you sort of have that property.
They can option it, and
exactly.
Then it comes back to you. With this, they bought it outright.
And that means that you no longer own any of the rights to
it. We can buy it back, but we have to
pay them back
the whatever
the money,
they spent on the development of it. So they spent so much money. It was back in the day when they spent a lot of money, which enables me to have a house and live in Hollywood.
Thank you, Hollywood.
You love that. I'm thinking maybe in my ultimate dream that now that I'm directing, that I'll be able to
eventually direct
that piece, because it really means so much. And I think it's so funny and so it touches, and we need it now more than ever.
Do you have just in a dream
be?
World?
Yeah,
who would be now?
Who would it be now? I think she should be young, because back then, my mother had started having kids at 23.
Right.
So I think it could really
could be a young bride or something. Yeah. You kind of put it in the context of...
Well, a dream, and I've actually talked to Lily about this, that she would play her mother now in the piece.
Oh, great.
And then we both said at the same time, what about Kristen Wiig? Like, can you imagine Kristen Wiig as Lily's daughter?
Yeah, I would have a blackout.
Yes, I would too. I think she's so brilliant.
Well, they're both so brilliant. And yeah. I saw Lily in, and I want to say it's called Grandma.
Yeah.
Recently,
because
I got the screener for it.
That was last year.
Yeah, it was really. I think there were moments in the script that were a little weak, but her performance, I think, was phenomenal.
Yeah,
to be honest,
we were hoping she would be nominated. For
I
Oscar,
was hoping
and she
for
wasn't.
It too. I think probably it was because of. Maybe
the movie,
the film overall. Yeah. And it's not to say that it was a bad film. Please go see Grandma. It's a really great film. It just was, I thought the dynamic between her and that girl was actually incredibly natural. Yeah, they had such a good rapport. And I mean, one of my favorite things that I saw her in was A Prairie Home Companion, the movie, because I'm such a Garrison Keillor fan. Okay. I went to his last show at the Hollywood Bowl recently. Wow. It was so good. I'm an 80-year-old in a 27-year-old's body. But she was so great in that. Did you see that with her and Meryl Streep?
I've seen almost everything
Lindsay
she was
Lohan.
In.
Ugh,
yes.
So
we almost did a movie with Lindsay Lohan based on a book called Fashionista.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and it was at Paramount. And then we got her involved, and it was kind of when her parents were still together.
Okay.
And so...
When was this around, like, Freaky Friday time or after
It was
that?
After Freaky Friday. Okay. But to go way back when she did... What was the first movie she did? Was it Freaky Friday?
I think that was the first feature because that
so
was
we
the
So we were
first
on a deal at Warner Brothers, and we were like, there's this young girl in this movie. Sign her to a deal. We want to write a show for her. Mm-hmm. And they're, like, looking at the movie and looking, well, we don't know. She's not going to become anything. We're like... Like, how great would that have been to have her in a show? So then years later, this script came up that we were rewriting based on this book, and we knew that she was really into fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So we got her attached to it.
Oh.
And as a producer. And I remember that they planned this big party at someone's home in Beverly Hills, up in the hills, that we were supposed to finally meet Lindsay Lohan. And her parents were there.
Yeah.
Everyone's a party and it's catered, la 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 la. They get a call. She's not coming. After all that.
You're like,
yeah,
okay.
Come on, Lindsay. It would have been a really cute movie for her, but you know.
Well.
I still believe in her talent, I hope.
Yeah.
You know. She hasn't done a lot
she's
lately.
She's very European right now.
Oh,
have you been hearing her accent lately? It's interesting.
It's like a Madonna accent?
Yes. She's literally Madonna-ing,
there.
Only she's in Greece. So
okay,
it's
so
very
tinge to it?
Yeah, it's got a very like Eastern European mixed with like Greece vibe, and she's kind of like weirdly hanging out with these like politicians that I think are a little like obviously I can't speak to it fully, but like people are like, why is she hanging out with like Grecian, you know, like politicians and stuff? No, I don't know. I think she's opening a club or something over there.
No, I want her to come back here. I think she should do a play or something and just, you know,
she's so talented. Do you think that that's something that you've been, and I don't want to speak ill of her, but do you think that that's something you've been keen to avoid in all of this is sort of that, I don't know, misidentification? Well, the misidentification of value, right? And because I think in this industry in particular, it's really easy to sometimes equate your personal value as like a human being with what you're making, what you're selling, what you're not selling, you know, because I think that sometimes even more than the wins, the losses kind of make us feel harder and deeper. And so like, do you think that that's something as someone who has been in the industry for as long as you have that you've had to sort of actively navigate, or do you think it's because of
you
who
navigate
you've, like,
it. I don't, I mean, I, as I, you continue and grow older, you kind of avoid, you know, people that it's just not worth your time and energy. You want to be involved in good people and good experiences.
Right.
You know, I mean, as much as I love Roseanne, dealing with her, the way she treated people wasn't always the best.
Right.
But I got so much out of it. You know, at that point, you have to take jobs. You do jobs.
Yeah.
And then now it's like, no, I only want to work with people that are bringing love and joy to the work. But we also don't know people's demons.
Right.
So who knows what she's going through?
Yeah.
There's so much talent. In my acting classes, I say, picture success on a back wall and go towards that. And then you will see things come in your way. Stopping you. It could be like your mother, your father, or teacher saying you're too fat, you're too ugly, you're too tall, or it can be yourself.
Right.
It says you're a bad person. And to identify what that is and say, excuse me, you know, step out of the way, yeah. out of the way. I've got somewhere to go and go for it. So we don't know what her, who's in her way, only that person does. I just know she is a super talented person. So I hope whatever it is, you know, it's like it's a gift.
Yeah.
And I just want her to be able to share it as much as she can and not squander it, because you know, it's like someone with a great voice.
Right.
Like sing. Yeah. Get out there and sing. You know, don't just sing in your shower. Just sing. Let people.
See? Adele, tour more. Yeah. That's what we're saying.
No, my dream is, I'm not going to sit and name drop the whole time, but every time I do this, it makes a noise. Huh? So I know Clive Davis a little bit, you know.
Yeah. I like a little bit.
I was at his birthday party in Palm Springs in the desert last year. But anyway,
people go to Palm Springs.
Yeah, they do go to Palm Springs and get invited to Merv Griffin's mansion where he was, you know, just renting for the weekend.
No big deal.
And, you know, just two buses of people's, you know, carted to a restaurant. Yeah, it happens every day. It's you know, like I do in the Olive Garden or two buses. Same thing.
I always bring a pass fan. Yes. And I say, guys, meet me at the Olive Garden, Hospitaliano. The breadsticks are on me.
So supposedly he wants to get involved in Broadway and has this obsession with My Fair Lady.
Okay.
So I keep telling friends to him, it's like, he's got to do My Fair Lady with Adele and Hugh Grant. Are you telling me people would not? Because I think she is so funny. Whenever you watch like things that she does,
she's very
James Corden
cute,
or something, and this laugh she has.
Her cackle thing.
Yes, I feel like do a movie or be funny.
On Carpool Karaoke that she needed to do a musical so that she could, you know, win a Tony so you could EGOT. She was so funny. She said, I ain't got time for that. So cute.
She probably doesn't, but I feel like I could see her doing that My Fair Lady thing. And I think it'd be great to not have it be the Julie Andrews type, to be this like real woman, And she, you know, she'll sing the shit out of it. And it'd be so great to hear her take on those songs.
Yeah.
So I'm just putting it out in the world. I don't have to be involved. I just want it to happen.
You're just shooting the secret out there.
Yeah, why not? I do that a lot. Just send the secret. And I think it'd be really cool just to, you know, I'm sorry I didn't go to her concerts. And I know
I actually didn't either, but they sold out really fast.
Yeah, I know.
Everything sold out. And she was like 3 nights at the Staples Center and every night was sold out.
And then I think of like, I've always had the dream to see Prince live and I didn't. It's like, that's why you just have to grab those moments because... Suddenly they're gone.
I got to see Brian Wilson perform at the Hollywood Bowl recently, but I am working on the documentary. There's a documentary happening, and I'm actually associate producing it.
Oh, wow.
I did not start off with that credit, so as it progressed, I'm very excited.
Just push people aside?
I was just
dropping like flies? I don't know what's happening.
And right until I was the last one standing. It's like Highlander with me. But I got to watch him rehearse with the band that he's been playing with for 30 plus years from the wings of the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh my God.
And then when the show started, I had to go all the way up. And for LA people who have been to the Hollywood Bowl, please appreciate that I went to the entire top of the bowl, and because there was a camera up there and I had to sit up there and watch it. And so I got to watch the entire live show from the top. After watching him rehearse, I got to there's more that I'll tell you about off mic because I don't want to give it away now. But like,
save it for the movie.
But those movies, those moments, you know, when you, when you have, I mean, you kind of just have to almost like pinch yourself and appreciate, like, sort of, oh my God, this is my life. I am in a bus in Palm Springs going to like,
well, that's,
you know, Clive
why
Davis's
when someone
birthday
says,
party.
You know, do you want to come to this? It's so easy to just say no, or I'm very comfortable at home or wherever you are.
Right.
And so sometimes I just go. Once I'm out, I have a blast and like everything's crazy.
Yeah.
But now it's in my life, I just take the step, go, take the next step and go. And I'm just fine. I'm just saying yes to a lot of different things.
Yes is a very huge weapon. It's a secret weapon that you can kind of like,
and then every
use.
Time you do, and then you meet other people, and that leads to more yeses. And but I know so many people that would just rather just hang at home and, you know, next time. No.
I can't. No. I think that kind of speaks to people who are aware that like death is coming, and those people who aren't. That's like I feel like I've been saying it since I was like 12 years old. I was a very macabre child. But like, I think there are two people in the world, you know, people that know they're going to die and people that don't want to think about it. And the people that know they're going to die are the people that are waking up every day and literally trying to do the best that they can, whatever it is that they're doing. And I'm not specifically speaking only about artists, although I think that all artists have that and fall under that category, because there's that sense of urgency to get that thing that's inside out mm-hmm. to the world, you know? But I think that you have to have that. You have to remember that all the time, because if not, you can kind of wake up and realize, oh, I just like wasted like 6 months doing a thing, or I just wasted 3 months not doing a thing, or something like that. And I wish people would, and it's one of the things, especially with the show, that I try to echo, but then I'm grateful that a lot of people
But you're not trying, have, you're doing
That
this.
I'm literally echoing.
Yeah, so I have a whole thing about the word trying. I teach in my classes.
Yeah.
That when you say try, you don't actually do it. But when right. you say, I'm doing it or I'm not doing it.
That is true.
So I think it's words are very powerful. And I think it's, going off what you said, I just look at it slightly different words.
Yeah.
You have two choices in life, and it's love or fear.
Right.
And I know so many people, even when they have great things, like I have a friend that just sold a pilot. And then literally 2 seconds later, but it's not going to happen. Already on the negativity.
Right.
Because people feel like they need to prepare themselves in case it doesn't.
Right.
I'd rather just live in the love. Oh, my God. Live, you know how they always say live in the present.
Right.
We'll figure it out. We're smart enough. We've been on this planet. You will figure out what to do if it doesn't happen. But why not live in, oh, my God, this is so exciting, and look what's happening, who am I meeting, and I'm doing this, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
In each moment is so pure. Yeah. So that's,
Well, that's actually a good lead into a question that I always like to ask every guest. And then, again, the show is Super Hungry Conversations with Not-So-Starving Artists. So it's working artists. It's people who, like, this is what they do. So speaking to that you just said, where, you know, we'll figure it out if something doesn't happen or something goes wrong. Has there been a time in your career where something maybe did kind of fall flat or didn't go the way you wanted, and maybe gave you pause for a minute enough to kind of be like, okay, why am I doing that? You know, like, basically, I think a lot of artists sometimes can get stuck and can feel discouraged to keep going. Has there been a moment like that for you, and how did you push
Maybe
through it?
Maybe very, very early on, but I think very soon I had this philosophy of taking fear off the table.
Okay.
And that was so freeing.
And what does
look like
in practice?
Literally imaging of it, just pushing it aside. I was, Susie Kurtz, the actress.
Yes.
Fantastic. She was in Pushing Daisies and tons of things. She was just in Mike and Molly as her mom.
Oh, I didn't see
it. Yeah, red hair. So she was doing an arc on a TV show I was doing. And when I was in New York, she blew up on the theater scene and was winning Tonys. And so as an acting student, was like, that's who he wanted to be. And suddenly here I was as her date going to event honoring Cherry Jones, who she had done a play with. I'm going, like, how am I in this car with her?
Yeah.
And we started talking about she had done House of Blue Leaves, John Guare's play, and won a Tony for it.
Okay.
And she was saying, I don't know how you do a TV series. Every week you have a new piece out there to be ripped apart. Like, how do you not freak out about it? And I was telling her, like, I took fear off the table. I know in our writing we're going to get there.
Yeah.
So I don't have to worry about that. We will get there somehow, and just it will unfold.
Right.
So when you take all that energy we spend on what if we can't, this, blah, 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 what they do, blah, blah, all that crap, get it away, you're just enjoying the process, and we do get there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm telling a Tony Award winner this. And she was saying, when I was doing the play, I didn't know up until the very night before what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And so it was just so interesting. Someone I looked up to, and here I was just saying my little philosophy. But it did save me a lot of energy. And you do get tested by it.
Yeah.
Like, we were just writing this pilot, and like the first couple of drafts was like, usually it would happen faster.
Yeah.
And there was just that moment I'm going, like, could this be the, and it's like, and I said, no, Stan, it's gonna be there.
Yep.
And then bang, the next draft, it was like all came together, and all these great people said they'd come do this reading, and oh my fucking God, like, I couldn't believe. And suddenly I had George Takei and Leslie Jordan in my living room.
I saw that photo.
Yeah, it was Sherry O'Terry and all these people, and it's like, whoa, you know. And it was just by, and they agreed to do it without even reading a script. They just said yes because of whatever, and
because of you.
Obviously,
that speaks to the goodwill you've obviously built up in this industry.
Well, that I think
is
important.
Industry.
Like, from the very, very, very beginning.
Yeah.
Starting out, always treat everybody with respect. From the minute if you go to a meeting, who's sitting there at the desk? So it's funny, I was having lunch with an agent, and she's like, I was that secretary sitting at Paramount when you, as little kids, came in. Little kids, but, you know, like probably 22, 23. She says, I remember your energy and how sweet you were and nice. She says, I always knew that you guys were going to. So right from the beginning, it's like, I think you have to just, everyone, we're all in this boat together, you know, and we're all wanting to create and have fun and do it. So, you know, whether you're an assistant or whatever, a PA, or you're the president, like, you just, you want to do good work and have fun. So just treat people with respect. And I think that's it's interesting to see it come to fruition years later.
Yeah.
The groundwork and all these people now wanting to come back. So I just urge
that must be
people,
really fulfilling, though, and kind of feel really rewarding to have
It's really cool, but it's like, what was I thinking back then, you know? And thank God that you treat people nice.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's cool. Because
I think some people think you just push other people aside to get ahead.
Right.
And I've always been the philosophy, there's enough work for everybody. We're all, especially now, we're all, you know, piecing things together.
Yeah.
It's not like there are, you know, when I started, it was, you know, three networks. And if it wasn't three networks, then you were done.
Now there's so many different
avenues. We can do everything. There's
and
the two web series that I just did were literally scripts we had written for other networks.
That's exciting.
And it was like, what are they going to do, sit in the pile? And then like, when Telefilm said, you know, do you have any scripts? And I said, well, we can make this character lesbian. And then suddenly they gave me a little budget.
Yeah.
But, and then suddenly I get to direct and cast how I want and edit it how I want. And then all these people are saying yes to being a part of it.
I don't think a lot of people, I mean, I know a lot of people listen to this podcast now, but I don't know if people who don't understand the film and television process, like when something gets greenlit, it gives jobs to like an entire community of people.
Well, that's what my mother would say. She would come to like a taping of one, because we did a big Lifetime sitcom.
Yeah.
And with Nicole Sullivan from Mad TV.
Yes, it was the Rita Rocks.
Yeah,
I saw that.
And my mother
really
would
funny.
Sit there in this big studio with, you know, the stands full of people.
Yeah.
And she would say, like, she says she couldn't believe that through our little head, you're employing
all
these
people.
Because even all this audience. Like,
some of them are even audience that are paid to be there sometimes, you know, not always. But, like, there's, you know, extras and the grip guy and the person taking out the trash is hired because of something that you wrote. And, I mean, especially with Rita Rocks, you were the showrunner. So that was two seasons of basically an entire ecosystem existing
because of
something
crazy in our head.
Yeah. Like, but that's such an empowering thing. And I think sometimes, again, I think so many misconceptions about the industry, you know, you see kind of, you know, some people either being emotionally detached or videos of them being, you know, too attached or getting worked up about things or, you know, people blowing up at each other on set and stuff. And what you what you don't realize is everybody's heart is on the table. You know what I mean? You've written it. It's on the page. But then not only the director that you've hired for that episode wants to bring his or her best. Mm-hmm. The actors want to bring their best. The art director wants to make sure that everything in the scene looks great.
Craft services wants to make sure that everybody's happy,
yes, you know? But like, there's so many parts, so many moving parts to bringing it all together. And theater is very similar, but I think with, you know, incentives and things like that, especially in Michigan, if I can, you know, talk about that for a second, you know, different states like Florida and Georgia and all
the
these
Michigan
places.
Michigan got rid of their
incentives. Michigan got rid of theirs.
Yeah.
And that's
thanks
the
to
thing.
Republican
is,
governor.
They, yeah, that. Because
they were building studios and all of a sudden, like, boom.
All of a sudden, nothing. The last thing that was shot there was
terrible.
Batman versus Superman.
That's terrible.
And it was in Detroit, and I want to say it was like 3 years ago. It was like 2013. And when, you know, like, if you're listening to this now and you have an option to vote in the next election in your state, look carefully on the ballot. If there is incentives for the film and television industry, vote in the positive, because it not only gives people like Stan the ability to actually get a show greenlit, but it gives everybody all the way down to the assistants
That's
jobs.
That's trickle-down economy.
It really
not,
is.
Not the other where we just give a tax break. You know, this is real jobs.
This is genuine
when
real jobs
drivers,
that stay
people,
in state.
Florists, everything.
Even the restaurants,
hotels, restaurants
that they go
everything.
To for lunch to get catered if it's not a catering thing, you know, it's like the local economy, the hotels, all of it, so stimulated because everybody comes, and when they come to a place outside of LA or industry town, they want to eat local. They right. don't want to go to the, but, you know.
Local actors get to learn yeah. and work with people that have done more, and then they can expand, you know, either yeah. in their own community or come here and do things that they never thought that they could
That's
do.
How I had another guest on, my friend Justin. He's one of the leads on Still the King on CMT. Mm-hmm. And he's from Virginia and started off as a local Virginia mm-hmm. actor. And that's how yeah. he ended up just getting into that and then moved out to LA and then had made connections from being in Virginia. And it's like, well, that doesn't exist in Virginia anymore, you know? So,
well, it's interesting during Rita Rocks was when the whole housing crisis happened.
Oh, wow.
And so all of our other friends were all losing jobs or not working. And yeah. I kept telling everyone, especially the cast, like, we're really lucky.
Yeah.
We're getting, like, to do this for 2 years. That's a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
And having money and a job and a place you know you could go to at this time period.
It's huge.
Just really appreciate, you know, what you have. And
yeah.
for some people, it was, you know, when they would be bitching about stupid little things or a parking spot. I'm like, look at the big picture
right.
here. I mean, this is really, really, really lucky.
I mean, it's literally the greatest job in the world.
And we're making
like,
comedy. Oh, and we're making, and to make people laugh, although I've done some serious things.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know any of this, but 2 years ago, I did a piece at Fringe Festival. I don't know
okay.
if you know about this.
I had a piece there a couple years ago, but I didn't know about your
yeah,
piece.
Yeah, it was called Suicide Notes in Their Own Words. So
oh, wow.
5 years ago, a very, very good friend of mine, Kevin Gill, took his life.
I'm so sorry.
And I was like, I felt helpless, and I didn't know what to do, and I wanted to use my craft in some way. And I came up with this idea, like vagina monologues, but mm-hmm. to do a theater piece where four actors are reading suicide notes in an hour piece. And I wrote little things in between and wrote about hope in the end. And,
mm-hmm.
And I kept collecting all these notes and putting them away, and then I'd read them. And it's, you know, obviously pretty heavy.
Yeah.
And then Matt Quinn, who is my producer, said, "You're doing it at Fringe this year. Get it together. You've
right.
got 2 months." And I was like, okay, I put it together and did a little reading.
That's
and
what everybody needs is a producer to say,
yell,
get it together.
You're doing it. This is a great Fringe show. And we did it, and it was so life-affirming. I
yeah.
know it sounds depressing, but it actually, people were a little nervous to come to it.
Right.
And then they left feeling like, no, I want to live. I want to talk about it. It's really starting the conversation.
The conversation, yeah.
So I got these producers, and our goal is to, we're going to hopefully do a big benefit with celebrities next September 10th in New York.
That's awesome.
And we want to start with just that one
yeah.
night. And then, but the goal is to eventually get it in a run in New York and then have it be able to, like vagina monologues, where anybody around the world
can do
license it. And the money will all go into a fund for suicide
prevention,
awareness and prevention.
Awareness.
And then, like Eve Ensler does for the month of February, you get, if you do it that month for Valentine's Day, you keep the money.
Oh.
So we want to do September because of Suicide Prevention Month. Whatever group is putting on the play, they'll get to keep the money.
Wow.
So that's my ultimate goal.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah,
though.
So it's been really, really intense and wonderful. And people, you know, wanting to share their stories about
yeah.
themselves or their family members or friends. And you'd be just, I'm amazed at how many people have been touched by this. And, you know.
That's, I'm like getting a little like, like Mystia. That's a really, like, I mean, for something that is such a hard subject for everyone, to be able to take that and to make it into something that can help people. I mean, it's like we were saying, like, hearing a laugh is like the greatest sound in the world. Having somebody come up to you and tell you that something that you made or had a help in making was like impactful to their life, I don't know if there's anything that really compares to that mm-hmm. in a way. And obviously that's not why we do it, but we do it because we have something to say, and you hope that you're not speaking to the void. You hope that you're not speaking to, you know, people that don't understand, or that it's just you feeling that way. And I think that to have that connection, especially in theater, you know, that
right
live
there.
Connection,
yes.
if that's, I'm coming to New
yeah,
York
well,
to see,
yeah.
I have to see
well,
that.
Hopefully
yeah.
it'll be all over the place, but I know people just
we
think
we can bring it to Michigan.
I would love to do it
yeah,
in Michigan.
That would be great.
And one of the producers that are helping us actually has a foundation because her son took his life at
oh.
University of Michigan. And coming from there, I would love to be able
that would
to
be
do
amazing.
It there, and especially
yeah.
with colleges. But everyone thinks like, oh, I just do all these funny things. But
yeah.
there is that flip side to it. And I had a very good friend of mine who was like, I'm afraid to bring my teenage daughter to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids have actually been the most open to it. And literally the next day, she took the program that had the suicide prevention number on it and called the girl from school and said, can I come over? And she knew she was having problems.
Yeah.
And said, any, if you need anything, call this or call me. And the girl was just like, no one's ever talked to her like this, ever. So the fact that possibly just coming to see this could have opened her eyes or saved her life or given her a new path is...
That's amazing.
Just one, our five little shows here, that if we can do it on a grand scale, it really can change the topic.
That's really... So that's huge to think that I'm it can hoping. Actually have that, like, tactful, like, realized result, because I think a lot of times you...
Well, you don't want to talk about it with this subject.
Exactly.
And that's what I had... Of the group of his friends, I was the one responsible for telling people.
Mm-hmm.
If they called or said, I said, I'll tell you whatever you need to know. And then one of his friends called me one Sunday and said, this is the impetus for doing the play. He said, you cannot tell people how he did it. He was a very private person, and I don't think he'd want them to know. And I felt terrible. And then I was like, no, this is the problem.
Yeah.
No one's talking about it. And so that's why I wanted to put something out there. And we take real letters from Kurt Cobain to war veterans, to LGBT community, to little girls that were bullied.
Wow.
And like I have the mother character read the letter of their child. So it's just super intense.
Yeah.
The woman that played Auntie Emma in The Wizard of Oz. I mean, there's just been so many, you know, Virginia Woolf. I mean, great writers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to, I mean, I would love to help in any way I can get that to Michigan, but I'm excited for that to be a continuing project for you.
And it's all red, so it takes one day of rehearsal, literally. So, and it's meant for people, and they can interpret the piece any way they want. If you wanted, like, 10 people to read it or one person to do all of them. I'm looking forward to seeing artists take it
and run with it
and see, maybe they want music, maybe they want to sing a song, I don't know, whatever.
Well, and you know, and I only am thinking of this because I just watched a piece, but Adam Driver from Star Wars has his charity where they go, and it's for the armed forces, basically, but it's arts in the armed forces, and they go and they do dramatic readings of plays on bases and stuff. I almost feel like
that
combination
would be really important, because veterans,
that's what I'm saying,
really,
but even suicide in the army, in the armed services.
No, I'm saying that's a big issue.
Yeah.
But Jared Padalecki, going back to Gilmore Girls, is also involved in it, so we were thinking
that's
somehow.
That's so wonderful.
And Anderson Cooper's brother took his life. I would love to somehow get him involved
I had no
in
idea.
Helping. Yeah, you'd be amazed at all the different people
who have been touched by
Jane Fonda's mother. So we would like to go after them and see if they would come, you know, just even for the benefit, come in and be a part of it for one day.
Wow. Well, that's so sweet that Jared is still somebody that is, like, in touch with you. And, I mean, especially with his Supernatural fandom and his Gilmore Girls fandom, that's somebody who could bring a lot of awareness.
I think he could. And people like Demi Lovato have, you know, talked about the issues. So if they could be involved in it, it would get people from all ages to...
Well, if I can help in any way, please let me know.
Thank you. I'll be bugging you.
Yes, seriously, that would be amazing. Well, that was a really high note to end on.
Yeah, wasn't that great?
Yes.
Okay,
well,
let's have some comedy
here. I was
going
to say, I guess I would say let everybody know where they can find you on the internet. We've got, let's see, they can watch Sex and Execs online?
Telefilms.
Okay.
Starts streaming March 19th, but you can watch
exciting.
Skirt Chasers now on Telefilms.
And that's T-E-L-L-O,
films.com.
Perfect.
Yes.
Like hello, but with a T.
There you go. And yes, I'm on Instagram and Zimmerman Stan and everywhere. Find me and let me know
your
how
Instagram
you
has slowly become one of the things that I'm like, I'm not jealous. I'll just like scroll through.
They should have a little instead of heart. Jealous.
Yeah, it's
jealous.
Just like an emoji
liking,
that's like, it's like a half smile, you know, like,
Jesus,
happy for you.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just like, it's called side eye, and that's all it is.
Sometimes I can't believe I'm sitting there with these people or I get them to witness, you know, these productions of things, and it's been pretty amazing. And, I feel very, very, very lucky.
Well, that's amazing. Well, I'm excited for...
Thank you for having me.
...everything that you've got in the future. Thank you so much for coming. And I am this was wonderful.
Thank you. Now I've got to make, like, a noise.
Yeah.